to Straight Talk with MJ. I am your host, Michelle Jeanette. Thank you for joining me once again. And this is my first post-election podcast episode, so it will be full of very interesting information, some of which you probably have heard in the news. But I like to also try to bring you things that maybe you haven't heard. And I'm going to end it with, always with history, but an encouraging word from different Christian perspective, and so that we can be encouraged, especially right now in this tumultuous time that we're in. And it's just really crazy. We're living in very historical times right now, as far as events that are happening. So, you know, I'll end with history, and today I'm going to be reading out of the Founders Bible. If you haven't heard of that, it was published by wallbuilders.com, and it is full of historical references to our American founding and how it relates to biblical principles. It's very, very interesting. I highly recommend it, and you can get that at wallbuilders.com. But I will end with a story from that Founders Bible. But first, I'd like to always acknowledge my sponsor, and my sponsor is On Guard Firearms. And safety has been a big issue this year, from COVID-19 to the riots to defunding the police and human trafficking. One way to protect yourself and your loved one is to be prepared. On Guard Firearms and Accessories is a family and veteran-owned small business that offers both handguns and rifles to help protect yourself and those around you. For the first-time gun owner to the seasoned veteran, On Guard Firearms and Accessories has something in store for you. Don't wait for someone who won't get there until after the emergency is over. Get prepared now. You can check out their selections online at www.onguardfirearms.com and visit their Facebook page and Instagram page. And when you go to check out, use the coupon code STRAIGHTTALK. And remember, Straight Talk has two T's. And if you use that coupon code at the checkout, you will get 10% discount. And once again, it's www.onguardfirearms.com. So, yeah, this is November 6th, Friday. We had a big thing happen this week. It's called a presidential election. And it's been quite interesting, to say the least, the last few days. First, I want to just, you know, bring to you some information you might have heard, you may not have heard, but I kind of like to bring information, and I sit and wait, because a lot of times truth gets buried and it's hard to read and, you know, wade through the weeds of everything, of the fake news, and to get to the bottom of where the truth is. And so I really was trying to spend, you know, plus on top of that, you know, wanting to wait for the truth to come. The last few days have been really busy with my side of the family did our Thanksgiving gathering yesterday. So I was spending a couple of days cleaning and cooking and all the fun stuff like that. So we hosted that about right at 20 people yesterday. So I was kind of preoccupied with that. And at the same time, I was being really purposeful to not listen to a lot of the news. I wanted to turn it off and really try and get into a sense of what, you know, what really dig into the word and get into a sense of what is going on. And because it's confusing, if you're just listening to the news, it can be scary and confusing. And so, but there are some good things out there. And I wanted to start with, you know, maybe not good things, but just get a foundation of kind of a sense of what's going on and bring that to you, because maybe you're like me, you turn the news off and you didn't want to listen. And so I just feel like if I can lay that foundation of some of the interesting things that are happening. And then we can close it with, you know, some encouraging word and what it is we're fighting for. I mean, what does all this mean? Why is this happening? Right? So why is this, all this kind of controversy, why is it happening? So I kind of want to address that if I can today. But a really interesting article over at AmericanMind.org, and it was written by Michael Anton, and he talked about earlier the last few weeks, even as far as a few weeks ago, about, you've heard me talk about it the last couple episodes, the Transition Integrity Project. He brought that to light along with some other people like Dan Bongino and people like that. It was basically a group of people led by, well, one of them is John Podesta, who was a Clinton and Obama person, but led by these higher up Democrat progressive leaders and a few, I would say, never Trumper people that got together and kind of played out scenarios at what would happen during the election and how they would respond to it. And one of those was obviously that Trump would win big on election night, but that the count would, you know, that the ballot, quote unquote, ballots would be counted and Biden would end up winning. And then there would be a, you know, a big, huge controversy over that. And they were saying that there would, it would take, the fight would be taken to the streets. And that was their words, obviously. So Michael Anton has this article out, and it's called Game On for the Coup. And it was written on November 4th, so the day after. And he basically goes through and talks about the numbers on Election Day and how the national polls were predicting a huge Joe Biden victory, you know, through all different levels, whether it be the electoral vote and the popular vote. And he goes through and lists some of this stuff. And I'm going to talk about that also in another article I'm reading that I'm going to read to you by Red State. So I'm going to jump over to Red State because they kind of talk about the same as far as the numbers. And then Michael Anton has a really neat way of wrapping it up of what we can do. And this is not from the Christian perspective, but it is from the, you know, a perspective of what you can do, like not just by prayer, but physically the other things that you can do to fight this corruption, fight the steal of the vote, because that is definitely what's going on. So over in Red State, this is a great article that was put out, I believe, yesterday. And yesterday. And so it says, it's not even close to being over, not by a long shot. This is very interesting, and it's kind of encouraging. So this is great stuff. It's written by Stu, don't know how to say his last name, CVRK. You tell me how to say that. Circ. I don't know. Anyway, so he says, here's what he wrote. I forced myself to listen to parts of Joe's victory, quote-unquote victory speech yesterday, and found myself shouting at his blatant lies. The most egregious was that he claimed that when all the ballots are counted, he will have received the most in presidential history. That's even a bigger lie than Hillary claiming she won the popular vote in 2016. By the way, how does her claim look in retrospect after what we've witnessed in the terms of massive voter fraud and ballot harvesting in Democrat-run swing states over the past 2 days? That's been, you know, this kind of stuff's been going on for years, and nobody has really done anything about it. And it, now it's what's happening, it's all coming to a head. The corruption in these different states is just astounding. So it's actually being exposed. The reality is that President Trump won in a landslide. And he's going to go on and explain this, okay? Even the Las Vegas betting odds switched to him Tuesday night after he built substantial leads in swing states by midnight on Election Day. Unfortunately, they didn't account for the Democrat ballot harvesting in those states. Okay? Listen to this. Late on Election Day, President Trump was ahead to the point of statistical certainty that he would win Wisconsin, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Nevada, all swing states. Then the Democrat governors in those states magically stopped the vote counting in the middle of the night. This is where this is gets so astounding. It's just amazing. He says, election night Tuesday at about midnight on the East Coast, Trump led in all the battleground states by decent margins. The betting odds were more than 75% for a Trump to win. Then for some unexplainable reason, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Nevada all seemingly stopped counting votes simultaneously in unison, and even Georgia. They took a, quote, pause at around 1 a.m. None of those states reported any additional votes for the next 3 hours. Somehow, sufficient ballots were, quote, unquote, found to put Biden over the top in several of those states, with more movement toward Biden coming in the rest of those, quote, found ballots. Many of those bunches of ballots found were exclusively marked for Biden, a statistical impossibility. So, if you don't remember the number, President Trump was up that night by, I believe it was close to 700,000 or 800,000 votes in Pennsylvania. And it's interesting because last week, the Pennsylvania Attorney General came out and tweeted that when all the ballots are counted, okay, a ballot is different than a vote, when all the ballots are counted, that Biden would win. How is he even going to know that? How can he possibly know that? Yet here we are. This is November 6th, and as of just a little while ago, the about 700,000 vote lead that Trump had has now become a negative. Any sane person is supposed to sit here and believe that they found over 700,000 ballots, none for Trump, all for Biden, since the election night in Pennsylvania. That's what they're wanting you to believe. All right, so he goes on and says, the turnout in those swing states far exceeded historical norms, another statistical anomaly, and a clear indication of ballot harvesting and voter fraud. There are no such things as coincidences, especially in politics. President Trump was up in those swing states by large margins with an on average less than a quarter of the votes ballots remaining to be counted. That Biden was able to make up the difference in those states was statistically impossible, another indication of fraud. The Trump campaign is pursuing different strategies in those swing states, plus Arizona and Georgia, to protect the integrity of the vote and to expose the fraudulent ballots that were submitted by Democrat operatives on Biden's behalf. As an aside, a valid vote is a certified one cast by a registered U.S. citizen. A ballot, on the other hand, is a piece of paper that is not certified and could be filled out by anyone for anybody, including on behalf of dead people. Think that's crazy because you've read a number of articles in the legacy media over the past several months, and he lists them, that claimed to debunk the assertion that dead people vote? Well, here's just one example from one of those mailed-in ballots this year in Michigan. And he lists this thing on Twitter. Post on Twitter, it says, turns out 118-year-old William Bradley voted via absentee ballot in Wayne County, Michigan. William Bradley died in 1984. So that's just one example. So do you seriously believe that the fraudulent ballot associated with a dead person is an anomaly and just the only one? Please. And the Democrats harvested those fraudulent ballots in the swing states. That means that the integrity of the vote in those swing states was purposefully destroyed by Democrats in their quest for political power. So much for their caterwauling during the impeachment farce about preserving the integrity of the vote. Remember that lie as they claimed that President Trump was hopelessly compromised through alleged Russian collusion and that he would allow the Russians to tamper with the 2020 vote? Yeah. In considering what to do at this point to right the ship, as we like to say in the Navy, let's consider the following for a moment. President Trump knows that Hillary Clinton did not win the popular vote in 2016, as she has repeatedly claimed since she was beaten, thanks to voter fraud, which has been a burr under his saddle for 4 long years. He knew that the Democrats would put the 2016 voter fraud on steroids in 2020. President Trump even told us during the campaign to expect massive corruption, millions of fake ballots, in other words. And he tweeted that back in June. He repeated over and over during campaign appearances and in public statements. How does that claim look now in the light of massive voter fraud being uncovered across the nation? And that means he knew and expected that what is happening would indeed transpire, that massive ballot harvesting and voter fraud was perpetrated by Democrat operatives in many states. So we're seeing that definitely play out right here. Knowing what we know about the fighter who is our president, what is the likelihood that he, knowing what to expect and then telling us he knew it was coming, would not do anything about it or have any plan to counteract and capitalize on it? Answer is zero. We can't know for sure yet what is in play, but President Trump has been ahead of the opposition, including in his own party, strategy-wise, from the moment he walked down the escalator in 2015 to the present day. The president doesn't convey any sense of worry even now. He reminds me of the Cheshire Cat. What does he know that we don't know at this point? Consider this. What if he's been playing the long game on the issue of voter fraud all along by setting a trap to expose massive Democrat fraud in multiple states as a conspiracy RICO crime with an objective of changing the U.S. voting system to remove any possibility of fraud or corruption? Wow, wouldn't that be a great idea? The Democrats have been hiding behind their claim that strong voter ID is equivalent to voter suppression for years. That's just, we've heard that for years, yes. And many minority Americans in particular have bought into that lie. In reality, that lie has masked the very voter fraud we see in evidence in 2020. So, what we're dealing with, he ends it by saying, I have abiding faith in the president. When he starts to worry about this election and that worry is visibly in evidence, then I will start to be concerned. The rest is theater. Keep the faith and support our president. So, basically, that was kind of encouraging, but he was laying out some of the numbers. And the other article was talking about some of the numbers here, too. It was kind of amazing how many voter, you know, the voter stats of what was going on here. So back over to the American Mind article, Michael Anton was talking about the election day, and he said Trump was supposed to lose, right, in all these swing states, especially big in the swing states. But throughout the day, on election day, the president consistently outperformed the polls. He crushed his 2016 performance in Florida. He outperformed in Iowa, Ohio, South Carolina, and Texas. And senators he was supposed to drag down with him, including Joni Ernst, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, all won handily. Even Susan Collins, the senator who was sometimes can be called a Democrat, she was supposed to be a sure goner, but she actually won in her state. So looking at states no one expected Trump to lose, his overperformance is even more stark. The polling average for West Virginia was for Trump plus 17. He won it by 39. In Kansas, it was estimated as a plus 9, and he won it by 15 points. Throughout the day, the president was also outperforming his expected result in key states such as Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. At one point, the New York Times meter had Trump's chances in North Carolina winning at 92%. And then suddenly, like I read in the other article, the counting stopped in at least five states or partial states. Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And all but one with a Democratic governor. When has that ever happened? It has never happened where they just stopped counting the votes. So, you know, we're looking at this. And what's interesting is the numbers in the minority communities that Trump received record votes and support from the Black community, from the Latino community. And it's record for a Republican to have as many votes and support that he got from those communities. So it's just, you know, very interesting. And what he ends this with is he's talking about what can we do about it, right? So he's saying that what can be done to stop this steal? And here's what the suggestion is from Revolver magazine. It's another interesting, the few articles that I've read from them, coming from other sources that use them, have been pretty good. And one of the authors has been on Tucker Carlson, and Tucker has been worked very hard to present the truth in everything that's going on the last few months. And he had this guy on from Revolver and talked about, again, he also brought up the Transition Integrity Project that was going on and all the color revolution on how they subvert this, our system, our government system of elections to try to overthrow it without violence, basically. So, but here's what they suggest. He says, what would I have them to do with, you know, he talked about the president and his allies. What can they do? All right. And he suggests a couple of things. Challenge the late night fines in courts. Hold rallies in contested states. Urge the GOP officials in close states to expose shenanigans. And mount a campaign to marshal grassroots public opinion in the president's favor. So I've seen some of that going on in some of these different cities. But I also have seen some other people that are out there for Biden, you know, trying to say he won, whatever. So it's definitely going to be interesting in the next couple weeks. And I'm going to talk about that here in a few minutes. But I also wanted to bring up, this is a video, as with any podcast, when I play a video, I will also put the link in my blog page so that you can go at your leisure and watch it. Because sometimes these videos are well worth looking and seeing them, a visual per se. But this particular video, let's see if I can find where it went. Okay. This is, here we go. This is Tucker Carlson, and he is interviewing a registered Democrat, and I'm trying to see, I think it was in Pennsylvania, and this registered Democrat was talking about he's like a poll watcher, and where they go and they watch the count on election night, and he was explaining to Tucker this massively large warehouse where they're doing all this counting in Pennsylvania. And it's huge, he said. But what they did was set up steel barriers. And the poll watchers, like himself, they weren't allowed to get anywhere closer than 30 feet. He was saying anywhere from 30 to 150 feet. That's how far away they were from these vote counts that were going on. And he was explaining to Tucker, he's like, how am I supposed to verify what they're doing is true and honest from 30 to 150 feet away? So it's very interesting. And he makes a point here that here at the end that I wanted you to listen to, and it's quite interesting. So take a listen to this guy on Tucker. His name's McCafferty, and he does a kind of a closing statement here that's pretty interesting.
And by the way, if I can just say the obvious point that no one wants to say, the city of Philadelphia has a long and very well-documented history of corruption. Doesn't mean corruption's going on now, but it means it has a lot in the past. So the onus is on them to reassure our concerns about their vote counting. It's not on us, it's on them. And they're preventing you from watching? Okay.
Well, let's just finalize this. The mayor let this city burn to the ground.
Yeah, I noticed.
Okay? Jim Kenney and Josh Shapiro, let's just say something. Josh Shapiro said before the election that, Trump can't win. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. That's not reassuring.
Tucker, are we going to let this happen? Yes or no?
We're going to watch as carefully, press as hard, be as honest as we can be, because in the end, no one will believe the results of any election if they don't believe the results of this election.
See? Tucker is really good. If you don't watch him, now I am not impressed with Fox News. I used to watch a lot of Fox News, basically because all the other channels had a script. And if you could turn the channel and watch them all, they would say the exact same words. So they were all scripted, trying to push an agenda. And Fox News seemed to be the only one that didn't do that. But lately, especially this week, they have really disappointed people in their honesty and their coverage of things going on. But Tucker has done a phenomenal job of bringing out the truth, to the point that he has over 5.4 million viewers a night, okay? Because people want the truth, and they'll go where the truth is. And when you get an average of 5.4 million viewers per episode, per night, that's pretty amazing. And that's why he's still there, even though people have tried, the Democrats have tried, big media has tried to get rid of him, so much so that Tucker had to move his family, unfortunately, from all the harassment. So basically, if you want the truth, Tucker has said that he will work tirelessly to bring that to everyone. So if you do want that, go to watch Tucker. He's really good. The other video I found, just a little snippet here. Okay, so here's just another example really quick, because I know I'm kind of rattling on. I don't want to use up every bit of this time for all this, but because I have some good stuff to end with. this is a video of some poll watchers in Michigan. And basically, I will try to put this link on there, because sometimes Facebook links they just kind of disappear. but I'll try to put this link on there. But basically, this is a group of poll watchers that are Republicans, and you're supposed to have bipartisan poll watchers. It's a law in every state. It's the law that you have to have these people allowed to go in there and watch. And so he's explaining what is happening at this one place in, I believe it's Michigan. And I want you to listen to him, and you can tell from his voice that he's frustrated, and he's probably pretty angry that the Republicans are being shut out of the vote count. And that's just, that shouldn't happen.
Sims, to allow these 19 people in so that they can assist with the counting, just as the Democrats are in counting. Now, Mr. Sims has said that there are COVID rules that he cannot break, and therefore he's not allowing these people in. If that is the case, let's take 10 or 12 or 15 Democrats out, and let 10 or 12 or 15 or 19 Republicans in. These fine people have been on a rooftop in the sun. They are well-behaved, well-groomed, cooperative and patient. And they merely want their opportunity to help count. and watch the counting. And everyone in this country now knows that overnight, 200,000 votes were suddenly appeared in the city of Detroit. That's a lot of counting. And those, if there's 19 Democrats down there that are counting, it's only fair that 19, now the number looks to be about 25, should be permitted to go down and count just like the Democrats.
That is just one example of many, many examples that of this kind of thing happening across these several swing states where, you know, they're not allowing the Republicans into the vote count and to observe and to watch. And they're actually kicking people out, like the video I showed you earlier. Another brief example of also of all this going on is an article on American Greatness. And they talk about a U.S. Postal Service worker in Erie, Pennsylvania, told Project Veritas on Thursday that his supervisor had demanded that all late ballots be postmarked for November 3rd. So all these ballots that were coming in today, tomorrow, yesterday, this was written on Thursday. So all are supposed to be postmarked for the 3rd. This is a whistleblower talking about the USPS General Mail Facility in Erie, Pennsylvania. So you have this concerted effort all across the board, it seems like, in these swing states. Because you look at these states where Trump was up by wide margins, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, even Wisconsin, Michigan, and even like John James that was running for Senate there, he was up. He was winning by a large margin until they stopped the count. And they stopped the count. And then miraculously, a quote unquote, miraculously, these hundreds of thousands of votes that President Trump was in the lead with have vanished. And now he's losing. And how is that possible? How is that even statistically possible? Yeah. So, it's definitely very, very interesting. So, let's see. There was one other thing I wanted to read. That was it right there. So that kind of brings me to, you know, all this confusion and chaos that's going on. When you step back and take a look at everything, why is this happening? And as a Christian, you have to put that perspective on it, the Christian worldview, the biblical worldview on this. Because it's not just how we've done things over since our founding, where except for maybe during the Civil War, we have managed to peacefully transition from one leader to another every 4 years or so, fairly peacefully. And this election has been pretty historic in the fact that and also 2016 election, in the fact that, the opposite party, the Democrat Party, refused to acknowledge that President Trump won in 2016. And we've seen that play out in the last 4 years. So they were determined to not let that happen again. And even so much now that all of this fraud is being exposed. And I've heard, you know, even Rush Limbaugh has said this. Other people are saying this. Christian voices are saying this, that, it's the truth is Trump is not dumb. He's pretty smart. And, all along he's been one or two steps ahead of everything that's going on. And so, you know, being a fighter that he is, and this is what Rush Limbaugh was talking about, and this is what the article I read about earlier is talking about. You know, Trump is going to fight this. That the question is, what are we going to do as Christians? I know a lot of us, and even people that I talk to, they're just weary because it seems like it's been a battle for 4 years. But imagine, just on our end, we've been praying for 4 years, maybe doing things on Facebook. I've started doing podcasts. it gets weary listening to the lies of the media and trying to put the truth out there. Just imagine how weary it is for Trump and his family. They've been fighting on the front lines for 4 years for this nation. And I hear people, even people that I know, maybe even some family members, talk about they don't like how he tweets, or they don't like his personality per se. And I can understand that. I mean, he's a New Yorker. He's pretty brash. People in the South, we're not, you know, we don't speak out. We aren't rude and sometimes crude in ways that maybe President Trump is, and people, you know, like that are. But I have to look at it in this way. Now that I see everything that's going on, and I see that the Democrats have been fighting this in this game with their own set of rules, in which they change the rules midstream, like they have done in this election, changing the election process and rules this summer in the last couple months to accommodate these mail-in ballots across the board. It's just so, because they, you know, it's full of fraud. But they've just been fighting this game of the whole different set of rules. And then you have the Republicans, on the other hand, who've always tried just to play nice, so to speak. And they're not, well, I think what gets people like me so frustrated at the Republicans is they don't fight back. And so when President Trump came along, he was fighting. He came out and said he was going to fight for the average Joe like us and fight for America. He was our voice. That's why so many people flocked to President Trump. And he has garnered even more votes this election than in 2016. And if I remember correctly, the number I read was at least 4 million more votes this time around. Now, that's just the latest. That's not concluding the battleground states that are right now still haven't reported all the way in. So it's a fight, definitely. And I wanted to end with some encouraging words, but also some words of warning. And one of those was an email sent out by Jeremiah Johnson. And the reason he sent it in an email format is because big tech has been censoring him in a big way. And, you know, we're not just up against the Democratic machine. We're also up against big tech, big money, and these radical Democrats who are allowing their militant arm like Antifa and BLM to intimidate and to make people so tired of all the violence and the confusion and the controversy and the conflict, so that we'll just be like, okay, we give up because we're just too tired of it. But we just cannot do that, especially as Christians, because there's too much at stake. And what is that? And I'm going to read something at the end that'll help you understand that. But this is from Jeremiah Johnson, and he talked about many, many prophetic voices saying that have been on track, you know, on record with a very good track record, but have been on record as predicting that Trump would win re-election. And he was one of those. And this was written 2 days ago. So this is kind of interesting because this is playing out today. He says, however, we are now watching news unfold that is saying otherwise, you know, that Trump is not going to win. In fact, he says, I believe Joe Biden will soon prematurely announce that he is the next president of the United States and chaos will ensue. Either a lying spirit has filled the mouths of numerous trusted prophetic voices in America, or Donald Trump really has won the presidency and we are witnessing a diabolical and evil plan unfold to steal the election. I believe with all my heart that the latter is true. And that's what I believe. Donald Trump won the 2020 election on Tuesday night. And the chorus of prophets who saw into the future prophesied it were accurate. They should not apologize. In fact, in the coming weeks, many of them will probably be harassed and slandered. It will be nothing more than a satanic attack to rattle them and challenge the faith of the people of God. I prophetically warn you, this is the hour to fast, pray, and stand in agreement with what the prophets have accurately prophesied, that Trump will win re-election. You must understand, China, big tech, including Fox News, and social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram are all in on this demonic agenda to steal the 2020 election. Boy, is that playing out in front of us right now. He talks about the fear, he cannot even put this online for fear of their ministry being censored. He even calls the media outlets, and I've heard this by more than one person, that they are like the modern day false prophets of Baal. They are shouting, mocking, deceiving, and taunting the people of God. And on election night, when they realized President Trump would be declared the winner, they systematically began to stop counting ballots and started their election fraud. They refused to be honest with the American people. And Donald Trump was right all along. So he is saying, even so far, he said, to be more blunt, civil war was declared last night or Tuesday night on American soil. The battle is going to be fierce in the days ahead, but I am confident that truth will prevail and massive scandals are about to be exposed. We are in a Daniel 9 moment where the future is seen, but yet participation is required to see its fulfillment. For all the prayer and fasting the church has engaged in so far for this election and the days we're living in, what we choose to do over the next 2 weeks could be the most significant in American history. His appeal to the reader is simple. Refuse to be the victim of fraud and deception and stand with Donald Trump. Do not give in to fear, but rather stand in faith and believe what the prophets have spoken, and you will prosper. That's just one voice. There's another voice. If you follow Intercessors for America, he also sent out and published a word, David Kubel. I think his name's Kubel. And he said this, I feel led to write to you to encourage you for the days ahead. And he wrote this on, the date was November the 2nd. So this was before the election day. He said, I have a sense that we are about to enter tumultuous times. I write to warn you and encourage you to continue to intercede despite the circumstances. You likely feel weary from the battle. I personally hit that wall this week, but we must pray for supernatural strength. I'm not sure all of you may be able to relate to this, but being athletic all my entire life, even still compete in CrossFit competitions, I have learned many lessons. It is in the final reps, when you are completely exhausted and have nothing left, where you see your gains. In a way, all of the reps before, all of the work, all of the sweat before the final set of exercises were only to prepare you for the gains you receive in those final moments. I sense this is where we are as a community of intercessors. All of the prayer, all of the intercession, all of the strength and energy is bringing us to the point where we will see the gains. In the midst of this foreboding sense, I received a text from a leader in the U.S. church, a major leader in the prayer ministry movement, and probably a name you would recognize. The message contained a prophetic dream sent to him. This is really interesting. Here's the dream. I dreamed the morning of October 30th that the prayer ministry leader, and I guess this was sent to this church leader, saying that that church leader and a prayer ministry leader were leading a team on a rafting trip. The inflatable boat had a ballot box in it, and we were headed to deliver it to the president. You informed us just around the bend was severe white water, but we could navigate it. We rounded the bend, and the white water was more violent than any I have ever seen. You asked me to secure the ballot box so that it was not lost overboard. You instructed the others to tie themselves in the boat, as we must complete this course together. Deep intercession began to come out of our innermost parts. We prayed to the angel armies to get us through these dire straits. As a deep level of tongues began to come forth, we saw upon the riverbank, which was high like a canyon, the cloud of witnesses cheering us on. The angel army surrounded and steadied the raft. We rounded the third bend, and the water became much faster, but as smooth as glass. We could see the president's helicopter on the bank of the river. He sent military brilliance, congressional brilliance, and constitutional brilliance to retrieve the ballot box. President Trump never exited the helicopter, but stood in the door and saluted you and us. He then pointed up to the sky and folded his hands as in prayer. He smiled and gave a thumbs up, then he flew away. We remained and began to pray deeply. This prophetic picture warns us that rough waters are coming, maybe rougher than we have yet seen. There will be twists and turns. Then as we turn the final bend, the momentum of the victory will speed up and smooth out. So tie yourself to the boat. We will get through this. So there's a place on Intercessors for America where you can go True the Vote, and they have urgent prayer requests for different areas across the nation, especially during the election time. I encourage you to go do that because they have a way to set up to where you can pray and let them know that you're praying, and that way you're praying with other people that are praying. It's pretty interesting. So one of the last things here also in Intercessors for America, it was published today. What are the prophets saying about the election? And this is pretty interesting, and I'm going to put this on there so you can go and read this, because there's numerous links that I really encourage you to read. But this is by Kim Potter, and this was written today. And always with IFA, they always start in with a prayer. And it says, Father, give us discernment and direction in prayer. It says, the events of this week have many in turmoil, and some are fearful. Others are wondering if God is hearing our prayers. 1 Peter 3:12 answers that question. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and he hears, and his ears are open to their prayer. God is not only hearing our prayers, but great power is being released because of our continued intercession. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. God has given his church many weapons, and prayer is one of them. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God for the pulling down of strongholds. This charge I commit to you, son Timothy, according to the prophecies previously made concerning you, that by them you may wage the good warfare. 1 Timothy 1:18. We have heard it said, some peace only comes after war. This is a true statement. There are indeed times we must war with the weapons God has given us. So it says, prophecies from God are powerful. They are encouraging. They lift us up when we need to be reminded of what God has said. But their effectiveness does not end there. They are also weapons. There are times we must take prophecies and war with them. We must stand before God and remind him of his word. In Isaiah 43:26, it says, put me in remembrance, let us contend together. Furthermore, we must remind the devil what God has said. He knows full well God always has the final say. And then it talks about, they list all these different prophetic words. So it says, listen, be encouraged, be reminded, take notes, war in prayer with these prophecies. The battle is not over, not until every word God has spoken is fulfilled. And it lists some of the prophecies given about Trump being reelected and about Trump. Kim Clement, Hank Kuhneman, Charlie Shamp, Mark Taylor, Jeremiah Johnson, Dr. Francis Miles, Kurt Landry, Wanda Alger, John Natalie, A Servant's Heart, and Jill Steele. Bunches and bunches of this. So I encourage you to go read those, listen to them, be encouraged, and let it be an inspiration for you to battle in prayer. Also, I would also encourage you to call your senators, especially if you have, even if you don't have a Republican senator, they need to hear from us. They need to hear that we want integrity in our elections, that these states that are in being contested right now, there is not integrity. We will not have trust in this election system if these corrupt things are not exposed and are not wiped out. How can we have how can us, the voter, have trust in that kind of system? So you need to let your voice be heard. You need to call your senators. You need to call your representatives. You need to keep calling them every day if necessary. And then if you have people that you know, you can, if you live in a state where this is happening, you know, go gather and make your voice heard. Because you have the Democrat operatives, they are paid to go out and make their voices heard. Conservatives are not paid to go and march. Most of the time, we're too busy. That's not the thing we do. We don't normally, you know, gather together and come together as one and march and rally and that kind of thing. Usually our biggest rallies are in January for the March for Life, where we have 600,000-800,000 people gather, in D.C. for life, for unborn babies. You don't hear about that, but it does happen. So, you know, we have to start doing the tactics that they have, which is getting their people out there on the street. I'm not saying, you know, I'm talking about making your voice heard. I'm talking about speaking up. That's what I'm talking about. So, this is really leads me to, let me make sure. There was one other interesting word from Charlie Shamp, and I wanted to share that with you because it's just one of those encouraging words. He said, this was written on October 22nd of this year. He said, "I heard the Lord say, watch Pennsylvania. Yes, watch and see what I will do. I say to the intercessors, stand in as watchers and as pillars of the state and pray Pennsylvania through in this election, for it will be the key that opens the floodgate for the nation to be delivered from destruction. For America hangs in the balance, and I have placed upon the shoulders of this state the key to victory that will close the door to the enemy that seeks to destroy the land of liberty. I say, look and see. I have laid a keystone within you, America. Yes, a tested stone, a white stone, a precious cornerstone state, a sure foundation where the bell of liberty will ring once again. I will cause a sound to ring out from you, a sound of triumph from my trumpet. For you are my keystone that I have set in the hand of the church to take down the giant in this hour, the giant that seeks to devour this nation, but will fall and his body will cause the ground to quake in the city of brotherly love. Yes, the ground will quake in the city founded by the Quakers. I will shake Pennsylvania, but by my power, and corruption will be surface for all to see, but the one who believes will be unshakable." It is interesting, that was by Charlie Shamp, that we're back to the same city where our nation began. If you're not familiar with history of our American nation, that's where our Constitutional Convention happened, where we had our Declaration of Independence, and where we first had our first capital of our nation. And we're back to Philadelphia. And so, this is something where it's having to play out to uproot and expose, finally, after all these years, the root of corruption that is at these state levels. We have to have our voting integrity in our election system. We have to. Otherwise, we lose it. We lose our country. And so, you know, I love this series that we just came out of at church. And the scripture had, you know, I've had this scripture for a while. And then he did this series, Hold Fast, based upon Hebrews 10:23. And it says here in Hebrews 10:23, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, and of not forsaking our own assembly together." So let us hold fast. So what is hold fast? The confession of our hope without wavering. He who promised is faithful. What are we holding to? What is it we're fighting for? You know, I hear some friends and talk about, well, I didn't vote for Trump. You know, for whatever reason, they didn't like him or whatever. But this is such an election that it was a very important election. Obviously, it's too late to vote for legal people to vote legally. But what is it we were fighting for? What are we still fighting for? Why even bother, you might ask? It's just tiresome. Just let them win already, okay? Because we're not just fighting for, you know, because we don't like the people or we don't like the way they do things on the Democrat side or whatever. But what has happened is they have gone so far radically to the left that their agenda for this country is looks nothing like what our foundational principles and values are and were. And so you might ask, well, why should that matter? sorry about that. You can hear my little puppy. But I'm going to read this from the Founders Bible. It's very, very good. And again, if you want to get this, you can get it at wallbuilders.com. But they have a whole, they have a article called What Makes America Great. And I think we've lost that because we've not been teaching our kids what makes America great. Why people from every country, why they want to come here. Why do people want to come here? You know, what makes them risk their lives to flee other nations and come to America? And why do people that live here really don't see that and take it for granted? Why don't they see the greatness that is America, that America was and can be again? So this was it's a little bit lengthy, but it's so important because there really is no other place like this. And once we lose our freedom here, you have nowhere else to go that has the kind of freedoms that we have here. So this really is a great synopsis, so I'm going to finish off the podcast with this. What makes America great? America once again stands at the crossroads of human history, with the eyes of the world looking on, wondering at the choices we will make. For centuries, this has been the land of the free, the home of the brave, a beacon of enduring hope, and a place of genuine promise. Lady Liberty stands with her torch held high, crying out, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." And immigrants from around the world have streamed to these shores with a hope and dream of a better life. This was one place you could come to with the dream of owning a piece of land. That is, if you came and worked hard and cultivated the land, you could actually have something that was yours. You could make your way and build a better life. That was the American dream. It said hard work mattered. It wasn't going to be given to you. You weren't entitled to it, but the opportunity was there. It inspired you to believe, to hope, to try. It said if you dared to dream and were willing to risk, you could create, innovate, and see your dreams come true. Is that dream dead? Are those days over? Sadly, some, dejected and in despair, have given up and say, "It is." Others hurl insults and deride America as the source of all the great evils in the world. For a misguided and ungrateful few, it has become fashionable to mock her former glory and ridicule anyone who has ever believed in her greatness. But are they right? It would seem that we are in the throes of a national identity crisis, no longer sure of who we are or where we are headed. We don't know if it's okay to be proud of being an American and all the good that once represented, or if we should be ashamed and apologize for our existence. And I know a few people that feel that way. Caught in that conundrum, is there any wonder why we find ourselves in this predicament? An intimidated victim of political correctness gone awry, we are in danger of squandering a heritage that was once the envy of the entire world. Why? In large measure, because we have forgotten where we came from and what has made this country great. America did not become the world's greatest superpower by accident. The principles that were sewn into the fabric and foundation of our society are in large part what have enabled America to become the most prosperous, freest nation on the earth, with the most enduring constitutional government known to man. Those are no small feats. But America is not great just because of the great ideas that gave her birth and the great ideals by which she lives. America has been great because, for the most part, she has been good. She has been the defender of freedom, a help to the needy, a rescuer of those in crisis. As opposed to a tyrannical dictator with a global hunger for conquest, she has been a benevolent force of stability and blessing to much of the world. When nations have been in trouble, America, more often than not, has come to their aid as the biggest global mobilizer of help. I shudder to think what the world would be like if America had failed to respond in World War II and enter the fight to stop Hitler and his totalitarian Nazi regime. Has America always done what is right? Always chosen what is good? Always fought for the noble cause as opposed to her self-interest? No, and I don't imagine any nation on earth has or ever will. To pretend otherwise would be incredibly naive. Civil governments are not God, and nations do not make decisions or enact policy. People do. Inasmuch as those in power have chosen to do good, to honor what is right, and have sought the welfare of those around her, America has been a force for good. Is she without fault? Certainly not. From early on, slavery was, is, and always will be abhorrent, as were the misguided notions of manifest destiny. Her push westward sadly gave rise to a host of inexcusable horrors that destroy the Native Americans. Yet, despite a checkered past, what has made America great is that she has demonstrated a capacity to learn from such mistakes. Thankfully, there have always been those who decried such evil. Refusing to participate or comply, they stood their ground and called her to live up to a higher standard. And in those critical hours, repeatedly, America has been awakened to rise again. She has been the greatest when she has been on her knees, seeking God's blessing and the wisdom to do what is right. America is great because time after time, in the moments that have mattered, she was willing to stand up and fight for somebody else's freedom. Go ahead and decry her failures and failings all you want. Throw her sins in her face and refuse to grant her any redemption. But in chaining her to condemnation, what will you have achieved? In doing so, are you not seeking to ensure her destruction? Such blindness seems just as misguided as the refusal to acknowledge any national wrongs. But our story is not finished. It is an undeniable fact. America has a great history. It is and has been a great nation. But just as freedom is something that is passed as a legacy from one generation to the next, the question is, what will we do with what we have been given? What has made America great is what can make her great again. An essential ingredient of the generations that truly have been great is that they did not selfishly seek their own welfare only, but faithfully labored and fought for others and posterity. Jesus taught that he who would be greatest must be the servant of all. in Matthew and in Mark and in Luke. What made past generations great is that they served and sacrificed and sought to leave this place better than how they had found it. History would be their judge. They knew it and lived in light of that sobering reality. Those who have ever achieved anything great have never lived or labored with the expectation, or dare I say, the illusion, that it would be given to them, let alone that they had an entitled right to it. We each have the God-given inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it is exactly that, a pursuit, not a guarantee. In never having had to personally pay the cost or fight the fight for the freedom and privileges we enjoy, younger generations do not adequately comprehend the sacrifice that was made. Yet what has made this nation great is not just the ideas, the ideals, or the hard work ethic. It's not just that its people have sought to do good, to serve others, to care for the needy, or to help those in crisis. It's not just her willingness to fight for freedom and for the freedom of others. All those things are great. They are noble and worthy ends. No, the truest source of America's greatness is that she has belonged to God. At her founding, she dedicated herself to his purpose, and for most of her history, she has honored him as the true source of all her many blessings. I know of no other nation whose most oft-repeated phrase or closing reference from the overwhelming majority of its leaders down through history to this very day is God bless America. It is a prayer as well as an honest acknowledgement. The original covenant that was established on the shores of Virginia in 1607 dedicated this land to God's purpose of taking the gospel of Jesus Christ into all the world. They purposed to raise up godly generations after themselves and called for this covenant of dedication to remain to all generations as long as this earth remains. Remarkably, the pilgrims who landed in Plymouth in 1620 did much the same thing, as did the Puritans who came in 1630. They all used the language of covenant and dedicated themselves to the purpose of God. Like it or not, that is the undeniable history of this land and the beginnings of this nation, and that covenant remains. This is one nation under God, indivisible, whose stamped motto is "In God We Trust." Inasmuch as we honor that relationship, as do our founding documents, it is from him that all our blessings flow. Let us then with wisdom heed the words of Isaiah 51:1. Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, who seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. Israel was then told to look to Abraham, their father, the father of faith, the father of our faith, and to Sarah, who gave birth to you, the child of promise, in pain. As a nation, the people who founded this great land referred to themselves in similar fashion to Abraham, as people who knew they were pilgrims in the land. We are fellow heirs to that same promise. In Hebrews 11:8-10, it says, "By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God." Much like Abraham and Sarah, our pilgrim forefathers and the founding fathers and mothers were above all a people of faith. They were a people who honored God, who honored his word, and who honored one another. They were noble people with noble and lofty goals, who sought to call forth that nobility in one another. They sought to live as free men who had joined themselves to the Lord. Saints who also welcomed strangers who covenanted to set up a society that would extend that freedom to others uncoerced. Knowing that the eyes of the world were upon them, they sought to be a shining city on a hill, a light of hope and a beacon of freedom to the world. But, above all, they were a people who loved God and sought to honor Him. If we cease to honor God as the true source from which all of this flows, we will not have the grace to be great. Micah 6:8 instructs us, He has told you, O man, what is good, and what the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Lady Liberty, before she called for the tired and the poor, first said, Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp. That is rarely quoted, but perhaps they are apt words to be heeded. Many great nations have gone before us and have fallen. A triumphant, self-willed arrogance will be of little help in the face of such seemingly insurmountable difficulties. James 4:6 declares, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. The last thing we need is some chest-beating, fist-pumping display of proud arrogance. We are in serious trouble and very much in need of God's gracious help. But the dream still exists. All it needs is a few dreamers who have both the courage and humility, for you will have need of both, to choose to walk in the footsteps of our forefathers. No, the dream is not dead, neither is hope. For where there is breath, there is always hope. God is not dead, and His purposes for this land are not finished. Yes, there is much work to do, and yes, the challenges are great. Nevertheless, for He is always the more, we are not alone, and the promises remain. If my people who are called by my name humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, and will heal their land. Of course, we all know that 2 Chronicles 7:14. The principles upon which this nation was founded and which, when followed, have allowed it to be exceptional, are not dead. They remain to be applied and are proven to be effective. The documents of freedom forged in the furnace of affliction are meant to be an enduring, guiding light. They are still very much intact and need only to be followed. But principles are not what has made this country great. It's the people who have embraced them and lived it out that do. Some say America is teetering on the brink of disaster. I would say perhaps she is standing in the doorway of an unfinished destiny. Liberty is standing there at the threshold, keeping watch, issuing what is another rarely quoted part of her invitation. Send these, quote, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door, unquote. There yet remains a golden door of opportunity. God's purpose and His covenant of blessing endure. With the eyes of the world upon us, I believe Lady Liberty is waiting, beckoning us to just step through. May we be a generation who take up the torch of liberty and choose, having done all, to stand, therefore, to be a people who covenant to do justice, to love kindness and mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. That is the key to our former greatness, and it is what will make this nation great again. That is an America we can all be proud of. May she once again rise to the challenge and soar. The inscription on the Statue of Liberty. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, and your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. I'm going to end with just this one last word of encouragement. It was a link from the IFA page that I read earlier, and it's by John Natalie, or Natalie. I'm not sure how he says his name, but he wrote this yesterday, and I just wanted to share this. He said, "Stay alert, focused, and sensitive to the Holy Spirit. Many things are about to be uncovered, and in this process, the enemy will be releasing a spirit of fear among the people. He is aware that he has lost and exposed again, but he will not stop without a strong attempt to keep deception and delusion present. Keep your eyes on the Lord. You will see victory, and you will hear the sound of freedom being sung that will shake the atmosphere." So basically what we're fighting for is really the future of our country. It's not just how we will run a constitutional republic, because one party has very vocally told us that that is not what they want anymore. They no longer want a constitutional republic. They no longer want the foundational documents. They say it with words, constitution, when they find it expedient for to use. But really, the Democrat have become so radical, the Democrat Party has become so radical that it looks nothing, their agenda looks nothing like what America should look like. Now, am I happy with the Republicans? Absolutely not. Most of them have been way too quiet. There are a handful of those who are fighting for this nation, for truth, for integrity. Devin Nunes is one of them who's been at the forefront fighting against the lies of Russia collusion. There is a handful of others that are doing the same thing. Very honorable people who love this nation. And if you really value the freedom that you have to own a home, to be where you are in life, to really worship God, you know, the choice was clear. It was with President Trump. So we, you know, if you didn't vote for him, I would encourage you to really pray that he does win, because the agenda from the Democrat Party is not going to be a very good agenda. It will be one that you can see it in California. The churches are targeted, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, the things that they want to do, like in Virginia and California and the other places they're trying to push this. The Supreme Court just heard a case this week on religious liberty. You probably didn't hear about that much because of the election. We need to be praying for that case, because if the Supreme Court does not rule in favor of the case, the religious liberty case, then Christian ministries, Christian schools, Christian adoption agencies will cease to exist. They'll just be gone, because they are will allow the radical left agenda of telling you who you can hire and forcing you to go against beliefs, when it comes to same-sex marriage, that and even transgender, quote-unquote, rights, it will erase religious liberty. And so this is what we're fighting for. What I read is a fantastic synopsis of what makes America great and why she is great. It's not because she was always perfect, but the left would have you believe that she was never perfect, that she was never good. That's what the left is teaching our kids. And so we fight for this. I do it in the only way I know how, which is just trying to bring truth to you and learning history. So press in and seek the Holy Spirit. Ask him how you can make a difference. in this fight, because it's not over. It's going to be a fight for truth and for integrity of our election system. And we just need to stand behind this president, because in all truth, he was reelected, and it is systematically being chipped away and taken. And when you look at the statistics with an open mind and see what's actually going on, it's very obvious. And so we just pray for corruption to be exposed, and we pray for the integrity of our elections to go forth, that this would be a fight for good that will win, and that, you know, that the voters would be able to trust our system, that who they vote for, that their vote actually does count the way it's supposed to. And, you know, we have a very pro-America, pro-God president in office right now. And if you are wishing him away, then you are wishing away your religious freedom. I'm just going to come out and say it just like that. Okay? If you enjoy the privilege and the freedom to be able to go to church when you want, where you want, then that, seriously, that is the level of seriousness that we are in. So, don't give up, because the battle's not over. And it says, do not grow weary in doing good. The scripture tells us that. Don't grow weary. Press in. Take a break. Don't listen to the news, because they're just going to instill more fear and confusion. You know, I highly recommend listening to Tucker. And there are numerous other places you can get your information that they just tell you the information. And I talk about them a lot. JustTheNews.com has been really good. Dan Bongino. So the Bongino Report, he puts it all in one place. And you can hear, you know, lots of good stuff on his page there. And there's numerous others. Always IFAPray.org is always a great one. So stay in there. Stand. Don't give up. Keep praying. The next couple of weeks are critical. And as a Christian, that is what we need to be praying for, that truth and integrity and the corruption would be rooted out. Any American should be praying for that, no matter what side you're on. So I encourage you to do that. Follow me at straighttalkwithmj.net. Thanks for listening. And I didn't mean for this to go as long, but again, here we are. And I'll talk to you again later, and God bless.